Coming to you from New York City, it's the Friars Club Podcast. Established in 1904, the Friars Club is the birthplace of the celebrity roast and has counted the likes of Frank Sinatra, Jimmy Fallon, Billy Crystal, Barbara Streisand, and Johnny Carson among its members. So come on in for a drink and some laughs with your host, Joe Sibilia.
Hello and welcome to the Friars Club Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sibilia, and joining me today is legendary stand-up comic, Saturday Night Live alum, actor who's appeared in films such as The Hot Chick, The Animal, and the Deuce Bigelow series, and has an all-new special on Fox Nation. And his name is Rob Schneider. Rob, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Sorry it took so long to finally get this together, but it's just simply that there was absolutely nothing I could gain from it. That's why it took so long to get
together. I can't blame you.
There was no possible way that I could benefit from this in any way at all. So those are the toughest. Those are the toughest gets.
You understand? You,
know? There's zero upside for me. Those are the ones that I find to be the most difficult. Where there's absolutely no advantage at all for me to participate in something like this. So that's why it did take a few months.
Oh, but I'm happy we worked it out. I'll tell you right from the outset, it was really funny because I sent an email to your publicist. And it wasn't 24 hours later, I'm walking to get a bagel for breakfast in the streets of Brooklyn, and my phone starts ringing in Los Angeles. I pick up, hello, and you go, hi, this is Rob Schneider. I was shocked that you called me, but it was...
The Friars Club, I mean, I take it seriously, because it was, I mean, it's legendary people were there. And I think it's by, if you take a look at the great comedians and people who... Of people who made their living by being funny and humor. It's an honor to do it. And Quentin Tarantino was asked me, and so that was a particular thing I took very seriously because he's a very funny guy. And it was a great night. It was one of my favorite nights ever in show business. So I wanted to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate it. But
like I said, there's just no upside at all.
Who knows? Maybe you'll be surprised. There may be some slight. We'll send you a bottle of turtle wax. Let me start off by asking you, how exactly did you first become involved with the Friars? I know you participated in a roast for Hugh Hefner back in 2001. Was that the beginning
of
your association?
Yeah, that was a legendary one. I mean, they've asked me to do a few, and I'll be honest with you. I've only done two because those, I mean, I don't want to do one where it's not, you know, historic, and I felt like that was historic. I mean, no offense to some of the other, Friars, I guess, what do you call them when they're roasted?
Oh, that's a good question. Roasties, I guess. Man of the hour. They used to call them the man of the hour on the Dean Martin roast, of the hour.
Yeah, I don't think that there's I did think like the Hugh Hefner one was 8 days after 9/11. And I mean, Hugh Hefner was somebody like, for some reason, he liked, one of my movies, Deuce Bigelow, and he's like very hip and he was very up on like current stuff. So he started inviting me to the mansion, which, you know, if you're a guy in your 30s and you grew up in the 70s, you got invited to the Playboy Mansion, you go.
Were you at all nervous to be in New York after the attack?
I went on, I think it was Letterman or Conan. I think I was on Letterman or something that week. And, the week or around that time, I forget exactly. Now it's been so many years. And, I was on with a journalist who used to work at the White House. And he said, we just got sucker punched. You know, this was a one-timer thing. So, I mean, no, I wasn't worried at all. But at the same time, it was like you weren't sure if you could laugh yet. That was a real problem.
Well, of course, that was proven that night because Gilbert Gottfried made what was probably one of the first 9/11 jokes.
One of the greatest Friars jokes of all time, Gilbert Gottfried did. I mean, as soon as Gilbert got up there and said that famous joke, I'm flying. I had a direct flight from LAX direct into the Empire State Building. It was a breath and then a laugh that was, I would say it's like if you could, it was like the tectonic plates shifting at that moment in time. And yeah, it was like, there are no rules. We have to get back to being human beings and laughing and living our lives. And in the face of this tragedy that had not been realized on American soil since, you know, December 7th, 1941, a day they would live in infamy. So that was a monumental moment. And I literally did. He was laughing. I mean, I was laughing. He was laughing at his own thing, like the balls to do that. And then by the end of his performance, I literally was on the ground laughing because comedians must shake and rock the boat. We must, if we are artists, we have to make the audience uncomfortable or we're not doing our job. And Gilbert reminded all of us of that.
I'll tell you, he has one of the best epitaphs of them all. His epitaph, I don't know if you realize this or not, it's too soon.
Wow.
A fitting tribute and a touching tribute for Gilbert Gottfried, one of the great comics of our time.
He had the best roast that night. He had the life-changing one. I had the best roast on the Tarantino one. No one can argue that. And I'm not saying that egotistically, it's just a fact.
We're going to get to that. I want to get in depth with you on the Quentin Tarantino roast as well. But let me ask you this. You don't just pull this material out of thin air when you're going to do a roast. How much preparation goes into getting up on the dais and roasting whoever the man or woman of the hour is when you're going to
I hadn't done stand up. I hadn't done stand up in many years for the Hugh Hefner one, so I was not prepared. for the tension and stress of that evening. So, I mean, I said, basically, fuck you guys, put me up first or I'm not even coming. At that time, they wanted the movie stars to come. So I did, and they did. So I went out, and I regret that because I should have gone later, but I was so nervous. I hadn't performed, stand up is something you have to do. And by the time I did Quentin Tarantino's, I've been doing stand up for about a solid year. This is 2010, the end of 2010. So I think I've been doing it for like at least a solid year. And then I really felt like I'm going to go for it. And I'm going to go for it. And I knew Quentin, because he was a neighbor of mine.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
So, I mean, I would get the occasional call to come over and he would read his scripts to me, which were was phenomenal.
Oh, wow. That's a really great experience to have.
Yeah, it was. And he had a screening room where he'd show a movie. And then, hey, man, do you mind if I smoke some pot?
It's funny you mentioned the stand-up thing. Did you find that it was almost like once you got back into doing a few dates, it was like getting back up on the horse or riding a bike? You never forget, the rhythms of doing.
Oh, no. No, it's much different. It's more like boxing. It's not like a bicycle. Bicycle, you can get back on, but there's no resistance. The audience is the resistance. I mean, and the same thing with boxing. You have another guy trying to punch you in the face. You have an audience there saying, make me laugh. There's that pressure there. So you have to like deflect the pressure and then come at it and then counter punch. And like, when I was doing the podcast with Bill Maher, we talked about Jay Leno, and Jay Leno had like how much we admired him as a comedian. And
oh, yeah.
A brilliant comedian, but also a master, the master technician who understood the technical aspects of the application of jokes and the audience and the interaction. And we talked about how you got to get in quick, get in. And like Jay got in super quick and just got into it. You have to get the audience into a place. I'm going to laugh. You guys, I'm going to tell jokes. Here they are. And let's just get into it in a way that like you just, and it's got to be done in an effortless way. It's very kind of Zen, in a way that just seems like they don't even know what happened and they're just in it and they're laughing. So there is a real expertise in that. That I really you can't get that by just jumping up and doing it again. It takes time. So I felt like, but at least for the Hugh Hefner roast, I didn't feel like I had it, and I still don't. I will never watch that because I don't feel like I had my I don't feel like I had the goods there. Whereas the Tarantino one I did, and they'll never show that because they can't. Whereas the Hugh Hefner one was broadcast on Comedy Central and will live forever. So in that sense, you know, for the people who were there that night, no. The 3,500 people in that gigantic room, no. Quentin knows. You know, Howard Stern knows, the people on the dais. But I was very interesting and honored that the only person who got shit on more than Quentin was me on that roast.
Is it hard to take, even as a comedian, as somebody who, you know, and you're going up there knowing that you're probably going to get a few barbs, do you take some of that personally, or you just leave any sort of baggage at the door? Not that you have any baggage, but you never know.
Well, Whitney Cummings was an up-and-coming comedian at the time. This is before she was famous, but a very good comic. There's a lovely thing that the Friars do, which is the night before they have a dinner with the honoree.
Right.
I think that's the name for him. And all the honored guests of the honoree. And so we had a lovely dinner. And Whitney Cummings, a very lovely, very talented, extremely funny, brilliant comedian, came up to me and she said, "Don't take it personally, please. These are just jokes." It was so nice of her to go out of her way to say that, you know. And Sarah Silverman was there. And the only thing I would say that I regret about that evening is the wonderful people who were there that didn't get a chance to talk. I will say that, like, I get that there are, you know, at that time, the most famous people at that time and the people who were allowed to, you know, you can't have everybody there. But for Harvey Keitel and Dick Cavett to be there and not get a chance to roast or say anything.
I think Cheech Marin was one of those people, too.
And Michael Madsen to not get a chance. It just goes to show you how unfair it is, because I think those guys had every right and more than I did to say anything that night. And
at the same time, though, you had Pat Cooper, who got up and did very well at the Quentin Tarantino roast.
Well, Pat Cooper is a legend. Of course, he's allowed to. He's like you put him in number four in your lineup for baseball. I mean, he's the guy that's going to knock a run in, guaranteed. But I will say, though, that even for like Whitney Cummings, for very, you know, polished, confident stand up, and even Sarah Silverman, there was still a little bit. Because I went on after those young, beautiful, incredibly talented ladies, there was still a sense of hesitancy that I noticed. And I said, fuck this. I'm not going to have any. I will have no hesitancy. And I'm just going to go for it and not hold back at all. And in my delivery, because the material was there. So there's that extra 10% that I would say in any performance where it's just, you know, the ones who really put it all out. And, you know, I just said, well, I'm going to go for it more than these people are. They were holding back. I don't know why. I think it's also, it's very, it's nerve wracking, and you want to be a little safe and a little bit more in your zone. And I just said, well, I'm not going to do that. And so I went for it, and it paid off, I thought.
So do you have any favorite jokes from the Quentin Tarantino evening?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, just having Tarantino right there and, you know, Samuel L. Jackson, yeah, saying, just say no to one thing, you fucking whore, you whore. Just say no to one project in your life, just one. That was beautiful to say that right to his face and him laughing. And then telling Quentin Tarantino, you know, it's a shitty, Quentin Tarantino movie when Quentin Tarantino's in it. And then, I mean, just like, you know, one of the movies he made, one of the scripts that he read to me at his house in the Hollywood Hills was Death Game or one of those things. You know, can you imagine Kurt Russell thinking like, oh, this is going to change my career? And then he makes, you know, it's the one shitty Quentin Tarantino. So, and I remember saying, so the Death Game was so bad that, like, I remember going to the video store. This is how many years ago this was, that roast was.
Yeah.
The video store said, if you like this movie, you may also like this. And it was an arrow pointing to a bowl of shit. and I remember taking a minute before the audience recovered on that.
That's great. That still holds up. That's brilliant. But see, it must help, you know, that you had that bit of a relationship with Quentin Tarantino. You could get away with that.
You've been doing this, Joe, long enough where you must realize that there is no, you have to go for it. There's no, it's not about respect or whatever. I mean, you say you love him at the end, but you got to go for it. You got to go for the, I mean, he would only respect it if you went for the jugular and you just completely go for it and commit to your jokes while you're doing it. And I will say that, like, in my life, in my career, my show business, whatever I've done, that was one of the highlights for me, was the fact that I didn't try to make people happy that evening.
And Freddie Roman had high praise for you because of that.
Yeah,
like coming from Freddie Roman, who was at every roast, you know, that was something,
that's why when they asked me, I won't say who, but they asked me to do a couple of more of those roasts, and I said no, because I couldn't top what I just did, you know. I didn't feel a connection. I felt a connection to Quentin Tarantino.
You pulled a Johnny Carson. You walked away while you were on top.
Yeah, absolutely. What I did, I felt it was all that was necessary for me. It was good. I did two, and that's enough. I mean, if they asked me, I mean, the thing is, they should ask Adam Sandler to do it, because I do think that would be a way to, he's a guy that would probably would have never said yes to it 10 years ago, but might now. And then that could be a fucking phenomenal night.
Anytime I see you with Adam Sandler at one of my favorite movies to this day, and I was going to ask you about this, I'll ask you about it now, is Grown Ups. And just the camaraderie that Adam Sandler has with you and David Spade and Chris Rock and Kevin James, and I could go on and on. It's just amazing. That would be the most brilliant dais that you could have at a Friars roast.
I think we could have a good time. I think it could be very well done. I think it'd also be like, it could be too much. But I think, like, we basically did the Friars Roast, the Mark Twain Award. And it ended up being really sweet because we all love the guy. And he's had such a positive impact in all our lives that... But I think a brutal one would be the Friars Club. And that's why I think it's necessary. It would be the bookend to that. But I don't know. I mean, I don't even know who works at the Friars Club or how it still exists or what. Like I said, Freddie's gone. And I'm sorry to say that he can't confirm what he told me.
I'll take your word for it. You could get away with putting that as a blurb on your poster.
I know it's true. I mean, I've never told anybody until I told you, Joe.
I'm honored to have heard that. That's a tremendous compliment on your part.
You know, and at the, as a comedian, you always think like, what else could I have nailed? You know, and when I think of that evening, you think about the missed opportunities. You know, the one joke I wish I would have said.
So what's that?
I should have, and I thought about it, and I mean, for years, I thought, what a missed opportunity that was, you know? It's like if you think about whether it's Charles White for the Knicks, who couldn't put the ball in when he was underneath the rim, you know, just didn't want to, he just didn't do it. Or like Patrick Ewing missing that one little layup, just, you know, all the injuries over the year.
Right.
He just didn't have enough to do that. And he did this and it bounced off the rim and then they never made it. I mean, you live with, you know. But it wasn't quite that level of failure, but it was just a missed opportunity. For me, it was Jerry Lewis was there. What an honor it was to just be with Jerry Lewis. And unfortunately, like, he really wasn't able to understand that it wasn't about him. And so whenever he went, he was talking about him. So he talked about him, which was like, you know, can be forgiven. And it didn't bother me, but, like, you know, Howard Stern just ripped him in my asshole the next day. But it was one line, and I should have said it, and I didn't. And it was, it is such an honor to be here on stage with what's left of Jerry Lewis.
I didn't
do it. And I do regret that. I was able to do it at, you know, we had a thing for Ed Asner and his 90th birthday. So I was able to do that about one of what's her name? Lily. Von Stuck. What was her name?
Cloris Leachman. Is that who you're thinking of?
Cloris Leachman. Yeah. So I said that about her, which is, and she laughed, I think. But you go for it. And like, that was my only regret. So at the end of the day, you don't think about your successes. You think about like, well, I could have done that one, you know? So that's the best way to do it. That's how you know you're a pro.
You were talking about earlier how you wouldn't want to go back and watch that first Hugh Hefner roast you did. But I know that when you did the Young Comedian special back in the 1980s that Dennis Miller hosted, you really knocked the socks off of Dennis Miller. Would you go back and watch that?
I would, but I also remember not being at my best that evening. I just think, like, after you do it, Joe, so many times, and you know that material, you kind of go on autopilot just in case anything goes wrong. And I was kind of on autopilot because it was so much pressure at the time, so much. And that, like, I just remember getting through it, which was still good, but I don't remember like any like the tingling you get, like at the Quentin Tarantino roast. There was like a little extra thing that came to it, you know. If you have to be a master technician, but then you also have to be in that moment and then take it to that next level. And you know, the 1989 comedy special, which was very good, and the material was good, and my delivery was good, but I don't think it was inspired. And I think that's the thing that you try to aim for, is to have the technical ability to deliver what you need to do, but then to like not be in control of it, to see where it could lead, how you deliver it, the performance of it, reacting in the moment, seeing it out, what else happens. And that's the magical element to live performance, because you never know. I mean, you have to be. That's the thing about watching Robin Williams or any of the greats. You're not 100% sure what the hell's going to happen, how they're going to do it. You know,
yeah.
That's the joy of it for me. That's the real elixir, or the real, you know, the magic to it.
I know out of that you wound up on Saturday Night Live, but was your goal coming up in stand-up, were you shooting for The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson at that point?
No, it was about Letterman at that point because he was cooler. So I got on Letterman in 87, and they asked me to do The Tonight Show. I said no.
Really?
I said, well, why? I don't need to. I'm not a stand-up. I'm not a stand-up anymore. I'm an actor. And like, so, you know, at that point I really needed to like, I mean, the problem with stand-up is that you could potentially hurt your listening skills in reacting to people. And that's a real problem if you're going to be an actor. So that was advice I got from Harry Columby, who was Michael Keaton's manager. That's something to really be aware of. You got to really listen and react 100%. Acting is reacting. And so if you're not reacting, you're only half acting and you're missing it and you can't do it. You know, I won't say, but there's some comedians that are great and listen and are there. Another comedian is just waiting for their lines. And those ones who are waiting for their lines will not continue in acting.
Now, you make a good point, because I George Lopez has talked about that. Tim Allen has talked about that. When he got Home Improvement, he was put into acting lessons because he pretty much had done no acting whatsoever. He had just done stand-up for the most part.
No, it's just the idea of what you're supposed to do and how, and the levels to it, and how to react and how to listen. And how to, you know, acting is life with the boring parts cut out. It's somebody, you don't want to see a movie where a couple have been together for 10 years. You want to see a movie where they're just meeting, trying to show the best parts of themselves and the nervousness, or just divorcing. So you want to, that's where you want to be. Well, that's more interesting, right? Isn't it?
No, that's a good analogy that you make. I want to list off some names here, and I just want to get your general reaction. These are some of the people that maybe you would have interacted with at the Hugh Hefner roast or the Quentin Tarantino roast. I want to start off with the longtime Friars Abbot, Alan King.
Well, I mean, Alan King is a legend, you know. He's a guy that, like, whenever you picture him, you only see him in a tuxedo.
Great era.
He is a there was always a twinkle about him. And when he's always kind of smiling when he's delivering stuff, just letting you know that he's entertaining, that this is a joke. And it's like, those are the kind of things that, like, That's old school 1950s entertainment that like that worked generationally. I think he's a giant, and you know, so that was so cool to see him and to see, you know, I was really impressed seeing Dick Cavett because I thought he was so cool.
Well, he's, you know, amazing.
Like, well, just seeing him on, I mean, like, that was in my head that night. I was like, why isn't he talking? Why am I talking? And Dick Cavett isn't, you know? So that's the weird thing about show business. It is unfair, and it's always going to be unfair. But go on, Joe. Who else are you saying?
I was going to say, what were your impressions of Jimmy Kimmel as the roast master at the Hugh Hefner roast?
I thought he was okay, but I didn't think he was polished. I didn't think he was smooth. I don't think he's the smooth Jimmy Kimmel he is now. I thought he was a little bit over his head, to be honest with you, at that moment. I just didn't think he was poised enough for the moment.
And that was back when he was doing the Man Show before he even did the.
Yeah, I mean, that's
show.
A shitload of pressure, Joe. I mean, I don't think I was. I mean, I was even worse. I mean, not like worse than him. I don't think that I was just so nervous to having to perform it like in front of Hugh Hefner. And I saw him go, ooh, when I made a joke about his daughter, you know, yeah. And I thought, ee. And like, but I think that like, it's when you have 3,500 people there, you have real heavyweights, you have Howard Stern in the audience. It's going to shake your knees. You know, it will shake your knees. If it doesn't, there's something wrong with you.
What were your thoughts on, and I mentioned him a little earlier, and you did have some nice things to say about Pat Cooper, who we recently lost.
Well, Pat is another one of those guys who is just a go-to guy that's just going to make contact with the bat. You know, I mean, America, for people to understand America who aren't Americans, it's like baseball analogies are America. Yeah. Put the wood on the ball. And that's a guy like that does. He just understands what he's supposed to do up there. Has spectacular, you know, timing that only comes from 5-6 decades of doing it. And you just you look at that and you go, well, that's a master technician. So when you have a master technician, all you need is the material, and then because the delivery is already there, you know. So basically, it's like a guy who's just swinging. You just need the pitch to hit his part of the bat, which is the sweet spot. And so that's the kind of guy you go like, I'm never going to be that guy, because that guy's been 6 decades of it. I'm going to have good nights and I'm going to have bad nights. And I'm going to have like more good nights than bad nights. And I'll have some exceptional good nights because I leave myself open to put the possibility of what it could be. But therein lies the fact that there's some danger, there's some what you don't know, and so you'll have some stuff that's not going to be, you know, wood on the bat. But like, not a guy like Pat Cooper. I mean, he's just a master technician at his craft.
You must have felt that with Rodney Dangerfield.
Well, Rodney was another guy. Rodney was a guy that like, I got a lot of jokes, man, and he was a guy that would like, again, you know, would become him. And there's a guy that you know who he is and what his style is right away on stage. Another master technician who was, you know, that was able to one of the few guys who can cross over generationally and be hilarious. One of the few, very few who ever did it.
You know, it's interesting. You appeared in an episode of Seinfeld, and the episode you'd appeared in was the Friars Club episode.
That's right. That's
what do you
so
remember
funny.
About your time doing Seinfeld, and how did that opportunity come about for you? And
well, they asked me. I mean, Jerry. I mean, at that time, I was a popular, you know, comedian and actor and movie star. So it was like, you know, you get offered stuff like that. And Jerry was super nice, and a brilliant comedian that I always looked up to. So he knew who I was, and he asked me, you know, if you're a funny guy, you know, things are going to happen for you, and So they asked me to do something, and I was making a movie with Martin Landau in Europe, and I really wanted to do that one. And it was where I was playing the pool guy.
Right.
And I really liked that idea. And then, so I wasn't able to do it. So then they asked me to do this other one, and I was really excited. I had a great time because they're so funny. And, you know, it was Charles, what's his name, who was the director, and then Larry David. And it was just so fun to be around with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and then Jason Alexander and Michael Richard and then Jerry. And they were so generous and nice to be there. It was really one of my favorite weeks ever in show business. And I said, I'm just going to stay here and watch the rehearsals for the scenes I'm not even in.
What's the process like when they do that show?
It's the same. It's all the same. It's all the same. They have a script. They have a read through on the stage. And then you start doing rehearsals and then they start rewriting it and making it better. You know, that's it. That's every sitcom. They're not reinventing the wheel. So what was really cool was having the opportunity to just be there and watch and see the set. And by that time, the show was a monster hit, you know. And then I was really enjoying myself until Michael Richards came up to me and said, "Hey, man, great to have you here. Sorry, this is not one of our better episodes."
Which is funny he said that, because I might be biased because it's about the Friars Club, but it's a favorite episode of mine. I just think that...
It's a good one, but it ain't one of their best. I mean, he's right about that. But I was honored to be there, and I got to see him perform. And Michael Richards is one of those guys who's very creative, because the thing about acting is you can have stuff, a lot of times if it's not that interesting on the page, you can make it interesting in your head by having a different idea of what you're saying. That's one of the tricks of Stella Adler tricks, which is you make it interesting here and then it's interesting to the audience, but it isn't by what they're saying. It's what you put on it. That's how you start getting work as an actor. You make it better than the page. You bring something of yourself to it. So there was this thing where he was in the kitchen kind of doing this, you know, and Jerry, and he was just making these motions. And I said, you know, Michael, what were you doing in that scene with Jerry in the kitchen? And he said, "Oh, in my mind, I had just farted and I was wafting it all the way so Jerry wouldn't go in that area." But it gave him something nervous to cover for. And that's what actors have to do. You got to make it funny in some weird way for yourself. So that's a beautiful thing. I mean, I really appreciated that, his honesty, and a brilliant physical actor. There are very few people in the history of show business that are as physically funny, where you understand him, and just you could turn the volume down and understand what's happening.
That's interesting.
That's a beautiful thing.
That series, it's amazing how it has held up all these years and continues to hold up. Just one of the greats, one of the great contributors
to the greatest sitcom ever. The great, because they weren't, you know, Jerry famously said, "No hugging, no healing."
It's a good mentality to have, and that certainly set it apart at that time. I mentioned before, we were talking a little bit about your work with Adam Sandler, and once again, I'll say one of my favorite comedies was Grown Ups, and you, I have to say, by far stole the show in that movie. I think you were absolutely hysterical. When you were filming that, how much of it was on the page and how much of it was just
Adam,
you guys?
I mean, the truth about ad-libbing is you have to have a good script to allow yourself the creative freedom to ad-lib. And then that was the case for this one. Was, you know, sometimes we would just do the scene and he would just keep going. But we knew pretty much what it was going. I mean, we knew where we were. And so that allows you the confidence. He said, "Well, keep going, do another one and see what happens." And a lot of that stuff he kept in. I remember, like, we were doing this one scene, my first scene, which is nice. That, you know, if you're making a big movie for, you know, Sony, like we were, you know, $90 million budgeted movie for 3 months, which I thought was too long.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it. You get it on that movie in 40 days. But, you know, if you have the money, you spend it and you can go for it more. It doesn't necessarily make it better, but it's certainly more fun and certainly allows for more opportunities for stuff. So, I mean, we were doing this scene where he had like a little toupee on me, covering my bald spot, and then I'm supposed to kiss this older lady, and
Joyce Van Patten, great actress.
Joyce, she's fantastic. Yeah, the ex-wife of the director.
Yes, Dennis Dugan. That's right,
Dennis Dugan. So, and nobody told her she had to kiss me in the scene, so she was uncomfortable doing it. Anyway, so we cut to, we're doing the scene, and they're laughing their asses off in the tent, and then the tent is where they're watching, you know, the movie.
Right.
They have this camera, you know. They have your tent, and so
the video assist that Jerry Lewis invented.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So And Jerry's like, I need to see it now. Why am I going to wait till tomorrow for the rushes? Let me see it now. So how do I do that? Can't you put something in there? And that's what it was. So anyway, but that was comedy. So you can see it and improve it on the moment, not wait for the next day when the scene, when you already broke down the scene, you're on a different set. So that was a brilliant idea of his that we're all using ever since. So anyway, they're watching this thing and they're laughing their ass off. And I go, well, this must be really funny. And then it wasn't, it was just this accident. The wind was blowing and my wig was going up. And I knew Adam. I said, he's going to use that in the movie. And sure enough, he did.
One of the funniest moments. It's one of the moments you walk away. And I should tell you that back when I was in high school, all of what, I guess, 3 years ago or so.
Good Lord, you're a young man.
No. I'm 27. I'm not quite that young. But me and some of our friends in the choir, every now and again, we would just shout, Maze, at the choral director. And every day we'd be threatened with dire consequences if we kept saying, Maze, at the right moment.
Good. That's nice. Thank you. That was just the thing. Because Adam was trying to find another thing for people to taunt me with. Because you can do it was like 20 years into that.
Yeah.
But it's been a fun ride. I think we're going to do part three of that.
And really?
Yeah. And I hope that the Friars Club will invite Adam Sandler. I'm sure they have, but he just doesn't want to do it. They should keep asking. That could be a legendary night.
Before I let you go, I do want to give a shout out to you because you have just done an all new comedy special for Fox Nation, Woke Up in America. Tell us a little bit about how the special came about and what would you say was your favorite part about doing this special for Fox?
They paid me. Well, they also said they wouldn't edit it. They wouldn't censor it. And so, I'm very happy that Netflix had my last special, but it was significantly shorter than I would have liked it. And so I was, for me, as the money is important, but also the freedom of speech was important. And so I was able to do something exactly, and they didn't edit it. So they had one note, and that was it. So it was just beautiful.
That's a freedom you're rarely afforded in this business.
Absolutely. But, Joe, I want to thank you for your patience. My friend Larry Bubbles Brown would say, I have hemorrhoids older than you.
I hope I didn't disappoint. It was truly...
Well, it's my pleasure. You hang in there. Give my best to the Friars. I will come back, and I'll do it. It is one of the honors of my career. Those two things. I would say, like, one of the highlights was that having the best set that night at the Quentin Tarantino roast, and just falling down laughing at the late great Gilbert Gottfried was an incredible honor.
Well, your contributions will not be soon forgotten at the Friars, and I most certainly will let the leadership there know, and I'm going to put in a good word about getting...
Freddie Roman's comment, I'll never forget. That's one of the great comments I've ever gotten in my life.
It really has just been such an honor to talk to you, and thank you
so much, Joe. Good luck with everything, and we'll hope to talk soon. Keep in touch.
Thanks for listening to the Friars Club podcast. Please be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. For more information on the Friars Club, please visit friarsclub.com. We hope to see you there.